Hey everybody, this is Dan Lobby.
This is Mary Kay Cabot.
And this is Doug Lee Maurice.
This is the Orange and Brown Talk podcast brought to you by Sibling Revelry Brewing, a family of award-winning beers made in Ohio. And I'll have a little more about them a little later in the podcast. But thank you to Sibling Revelry for sponsoring us and sponsoring our first victory podcast of 2018. The Browns 21-17 winners over the New York Jets had to come from behind and we all know what the big story is. Baker Mayfield. He came in, he was electric, and he led the team back.
You know what, Dan? The most gratifying thing was to look out. I have been watching these fans in these stands since 1999 have heartache and agony most of the time. To look out there and just see how Baker Mayfield energized these fans, and this place was electric. He just ignited the whole place. He ignited his teammates. He was the quarterback that we watched all those years at Oklahoma. And it was just really fun to see Browns fans leave here with so much joy.
He had a throw into the end zone that easily could have been picked. And he had a fumble that got recovered by one of his teammates. Even if that throw had been picked, and even if the fumble had been recovered by the Jets, and even if somehow the Browns didn't win this game, those moments that you're talking about, Mary Kay, that was worth so much. It's almost funny. Like, the Browns winning, the Browns won. As you said, the Browns won. But that really is not the story. That if they would have lost tonight, this still would have been this feeling that people, if they would have, you know, if the defense had given up a play at the end and Baker still made great plays, but they lost. This was about people being energized by Baker Mayfield. And, oh, by the way, they won. But you sensed that the minute he got on the field.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like you have a crystal ball right now and you can look into it. And the future really looks bright. Dan, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was what I wrote in my Instant Gamer was, we saw the future tonight, hopefully. And it's a bright one. And just the crazy thing is we have the contrast in the game, right? I mean, these fans were booing. This team was well on its way to going winless in the first three games. This stadium sounded and felt like it has for forever, you know, since they built this place. And then here comes Baker strolling in after Tyrod Taylor leaves with a concussion. Mm-hmm. Second half leads him to a drive at the end of the first half. Makes throws that we haven't seen a Browns quarterback in this stadium make I don't know how long. I mean, that throw to Jarvis Landry down to the 1 yard line over here to our left.
Yeah.
The one to Antonio Callaway that he dropped.
Right.
Right on them. We haven't seen a quarterback make throws like that
and
in
a
Browns uniform.
Every single day in training camp, that's all we saw him do was throw dimes. I mean, he threw the ball on the money every single day. I've never seen a quarterback locate the ball the way that he does, that has come through Cleveland at least. I mean, he is an amazing locator. He gets rid of the ball very quickly, and he energized, and I mean, those receivers snapped to life. Mm-hmm. I mean, they came to life. Jarvis Landry came to life. This place was dying before he went in there. It was a disaster. We would have been talking about, is Hugh Jackson going to get fired in the 10 days before Oakland, right? The narrative. If Tyrod Taylor, so actually, the person that knocked Tyrod Taylor out of the game, number 54, now I'm forgetting his name, the person that knocked him out of the game, Cleveland fans have him to thank right now because the season just turned. And I don't care what anybody wants to say, you know, Hugh Jackson wasn't about to name Baker the starter for the rest of the season before watching the film, before doing any of that, while Tyrod Taylor is somewhere suffering with a concussion. He wasn't about to be, I'm sure, disrespectful in that way. But there is no way, let's just get it out there right now, there's no way in hell that you can't turn this thing over to Baker Mayfield.
He's going to do it. Tomorrow on the conference call or Monday, when he talks to us on Monday, he's going to do it. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, the idea, and again, it's what you guys just said, that they were dead, right?
Yes.
They were dead, and Baker Mayfield brought them back. In week one, the Browns were dead. And Myles Garrett brought them back by forcing that fumble and giving them life again. So I don't mean this to exactly be a Sashi Brown point because people don't want to hear that.
But keep this podcast short, though.
I want to make the point that they have drafted two players, number one overall in the draft, and everyone was talking about how close the Browns are to 3-0. They could be 0-3. Myles Garrett kept them from losing to Pittsburgh. Baker Mayfield kept them from losing here. And for a franchise that has not converted first-round picks into anything for a decade, it seems like sitting here right now, they got difference makers with the overall number one pick the last 2 years, and it has already paid dividends with a victory and a tie this year, and you can see what that might look like down the line. But both those guys ignited the stadium and helped the Browns get back in games.
You know what no one is talking about right now? Denzel Ward.
Yeah,
Denzel. He might have made the play. Honestly, we can talk about Baker Mayfield
for sure.
He's the story. That play by Denzel Ward, that was a first down conversion.
Yeah.
The Jets were getting out of the shadow of their end zone, and Denzel Ward strips the ball. I believe it was Joe Schobert. Somebody told me this week that the Browns don't track defenders getting to the player. They track defenders getting to the ball.
Yes.
Which we've seen with Terrence Mitchell. Mm. We saw with Denzel Ward. This football team is forcing turnovers. Again, like we didn't see last year or the year before. They're up to 9 now on the season.
Isn't it more than that?
Or did they get 2 today?
How many
did they? I totally missed a couple of times. I don't have the game book in front of me.
You must have been writing. Joe Schobert got an interception.
I must have been. Yes, you're right. Schobert's interception at the end of the game.
Terrence Mitchell got an interception.
I wasn't counting those. So they got 3 of them.
Yeah.
11.
3 takeaways today.
They have 13 all of last year. But it started with Denzel Ward making that incredible play.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are a lot of things to get excited about. But once again, the number one thing right now is that they haven't had all these years was a quarterback that can make plays for them. And now it seems that they have that. And you don't want to overreact after one game. But I think it is time to get excited. Let fans get excited about this. I mean, throw him out there and see what he can do. Does anybody really want to watch more of what you have seen so far from Tyrod Taylor?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, in the end, this whole thing, obviously, it's all going to be about winning. But on the way to winning, fun is a step in between miserable sucking.
Right.
And playoff winning.
Right.
On the way to there, it starts to get fun. Now, this was not an indication that the Browns are going to make the playoffs this year, but guess what? In front of the entire country, they won, and everybody here had a really good time. That's a step.
And beer coolers cracked open all over the city, and, you know, it was fun. Yeah. It was so fun to see these fans in the stands just realizing that it is believe land here now, that some good years could be coming in Brownstown.
But here's the thing. We don't have to just talk about fun tonight. We're talking about they did win the game.
Absolutely.
They did win the game, and it was in big part because of Baker Mayfield. And Mary Kay, you and I talked about this the last podcast we did.
Yeah.
This team might have a playoff caliber defense.
Right.
That doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs, but this defense is a playoff caliber defense. If Baker Mayfield can at least get this offense moving and at least give you some kind of threat downfield and give you a guy that, look, he opens up the run game because defenses have to. I looked down there and I saw times where the Jets didn't even have a safety deep when Taylor was out there.
Yeah.
You can't do that with Baker Mayfield. So it opens up the run game. The offensive line was suddenly better when Baker Mayfield was out there because the ball comes out so quickly. Now teams are going to get filmed. They're going to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna hit some rough patches, but you're giving yourself a chance to win some football games here coming up.
When you can get the ball out that quickly, and when it goes exactly where you want it to go, almost every single time it comes off of your hand, you're going to make a ton of plays, regardless of, I think, how much film they get on you, you're still going to be able to go out there and be successful. I think the future is bright with him. I really think, I don't know, I've watched him every day in training camp, so this is not, I'm not just saying this after one game. In fact, you guys know that I was trying to get ready to write a column and saying, you know, don't compare him to, you know, don't make him wait just because you made Pat Mahomes wait. Don't make him wait because you made Aaron Rodgers wait. Don't do this. Don't look out there and think, let's play Tyrod Taylor because we played Alex Smith last year. You needed to look at this situation for what you had, and I think what you had was probably better than Tyrod Taylor even last week and possibly even the week before. So now Hugh Jackson says he doesn't regret that decision, that it wasn't time to do it until now, and we're just going to have to go with that because you know why? Part of that was they didn't want to get him killed. Mm-hmm. They did not want to get him killed. They had an undrafted rookie starting at left tackle, and I don't think that they wanted to put him in harm's way. He had to be able to to be really ready to go. Now, if Joe Thomas had been the left tackle, I think he may have started the first week because they know what they have. That's why they drafted him number one overall.
Yeah.
I think they were afraid of getting him killed.
It is. I thought the one thing is there's so much rhythm, so much more rhythm to the offense with him clearly, but also it seems like a lot of Tyrod's best plays are scrambles. He had the touchdown run in week one. He had a nice scramble today. It was 22 yards. But when Baker gets out of the pocket, he looks to still throw. He keeps his eyes downfield, and it's both sides of it. In rhythm, it's better, and when it breaks down, it's better because, yeah, Tyrod will get some yards with his legs. But when Baker gets outside the pocket, you expect guys are open on the sideline. They're ready. I mean, he's directing traffic, and that's how you're really going to move the ball, not with a quarterback who's going to run, who's going to run to throw.
Yeah, I always thought it was a little naive to think that they were gonna sit Baker the whole year. Now I was on board with this plan. I thought it was, I thought they were approached it the right way. But it also always came with that caveat that plans change, right? We saw it with Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, name any number of Jared Goff eventually started later in the year. Mitch Trubisky last year took I think four games. So those plans change, and Hugh Jackson kind of got forced into this change. Maybe it'll be a good thing for the Browns.
He got bailed out because he didn't have to make a decision. And I do think there's something to the idea that this is probably the most important. Handling Baker Mayfield is the most important thing Hugh Jackson has done in 3 years as the head coach of the Browns. And in the end, the most important decision he had, he didn't make. He was forced into it because somebody got hurt. And I think that's a little bit abdicating responsibilities, but he didn't have to go to Tyrod Taylor, the guy who's this great leader and has rallied the team in camp and all this, and say, you're benched. This happened. The decision was made for him. It seems like probably Tyrod won't even be able to play maybe next week. There won't be a decision there. And then by the time, when Tyrod's ready, the decision will have been made. It'll be so obvious to everyone. But That sticks in my craw a little bit that Hugh said afterward, well, we sort of always knew this was going to work itself out. So what? You knew Tyrod Taylor was going to get hurt in the second quarter of week three? And it was going to work out somewhere? Like, he didn't make a decision.
No, I think that they needed to see what Desmond Harrison sat out of football for 3 years. I think they needed to get him his sea legs before they were willing to risk Baker Mayfield.
No, and I agree with that, but I'm just curious, and we'll never know the answer. We'll never know the answer. But if Tyrod Taylor didn't get hurt tonight, would he have brought Baker in?
Or if he would have brought Baker in.
You do think?
I think it was headed that way.
He would not answer the question postgame. He said it didn't happen, so it doesn't matter. He wouldn't answer.
Well, no, I think the question was, had Tyrod not been diagnosed with the concussion, would he have, if he had been cleared from the concussion, would he have put him back in the game? The answer is no. He would not have. I can promise you that he would not have. Even before he got hurt, I turned to you next to me and Dave Campbell, our boss, on the other side of me, and I said, Baker's going into this game by hook. I said, by hook or by crook, Baker Mayfield is going into this
football. It felt like it was going that way. You felt that too, Dan?
I felt that too. Now, Mary Carey, you good on time?
Yeah, give me a couple minutes.
Okay, and then I'll just make sure. I want to stop us here for a second because I want to talk about Sibling Revelry Brewery real quick. Browns fans, if you're looking for a way to celebrate this win because all that free Bud Light is gone and you actually want to drink some good beer, head over to 29305 Clemens Road, just north of I-90 at the Crocker Road exit. That's where Sibling Revelry Brewery is. You can visit their tap room. 16 beers, always on draft. They'll show you games. They got a beautiful patio. They've got a new release. It's called Quiet Hero. They're open all weekend. It'll feature two of Cleveland's best food trucks on Friday from 4 to 11. Barrio food truck will be there. Saturday, noon to 11, the Little Piggy food truck will be there. Also from 5 to 9 p.m. or until the food's gone, which it might be because everybody's going to want to celebrate this win. And then that's not all. If you can't go to Westlake on Saturday, September 22nd, join Sibling Revelry at Spoon Market and Deli in Worcester for a special tasting event. They will be tasting their red third wheel fest beer and their new limited Quiet Hero Hazy IPA. I've got a little bit more here. Lots of stuff going on with these guys. Before the Steelers-Bucks game on Monday night, if you're into fitness and beer, how about this? Boy Band Boogie and Beer Dance Fitness Class. Ooh. 6:30 to 8 p.m.
That sounds like a video. Maybe we could...
That sounds right up Doug's alley.
I'm ready to boogie. I'm ready to boogie.
You can join Stacy Melda Fitness for a boy band-themed dance party. All fitness levels welcome. Feel nostalgic with some of your all-time favorite boy band songs, mostly from the 80s and 90s. Girl bands not excluded. I'm not sure what that means. Some current hits included as well, and it's going to be epic. EPIC, all capitalized, includes an SRB beer of your choice, a Sibling Revelry Brewery beer of your choice to enjoy while you mingle after.
But they got some NSYNC they're going to play. I'm going to go to that. Yeah.
And we will be doing a live event over the bye week, so we will be telling you more about that at Sibling Revelry Brewery as we go along.
Sibling Revelry Brewery, our sponsor of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast, which has become very Kent State heavy with those, with one of their owners played football at Kent State. Mary Kay and I, of course, both Kent State alums.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
Oh, you know, Doug, I wanted to ask you real quick because you covered the game.
All right, you guys.
Mary Kay's going to have to run out here.
I'm
going to
go write a couple of stories. It was fun. And I'll see you guys next time.
Yeah. So, Doug, I wanted to ask you before we go because you were actually at the game at the Horseshoe when Baker Mayfield beat Ohio State.
Yes.
Obviously, that was a road game for Baker, but it was still one of those kind of electric, kind of stop you in your tracks performances.
Yeah.
Was there a little bit of that here tonight?
No, I think there was. I think there was. Ripping, it's funny the things that are dynamic with him, but just the way he rips throws in the middle of the field. He just attacks passing lanes, and sometimes he's not even squeezing him. He doesn't care. You know, he just is not afraid to make throws that a lot of quarterbacks and sometimes are afraid to make it. And it's the contrast that stands out, right? And that's the thing. And it's funny because I wrote after the first week of the season, I said that Tyrod Taylor is like JT Barrett, comparing Tyrod Taylor to the former Ohio State quarterback, because they're both conservative guys who don't want to do that. And last year when Baker Mayfield did that to Ohio State, it was in stark contrast to JT Barrett. Like, hey, not all quarterbacks will do this. Not all quarterbacks have the confidence and the arm strength and the accuracy to try this. And that's exactly what it was tonight. Baker was great, but he was greater because it was the contrast to Tyrod Taylor. That he comes in and it's like, well, Tyrod Taylor didn't do any of that stuff. He was 4 of 14 for 19 yards. He didn't try any of those throws. And it's just that you realize sometimes Baker, a guy like Baker, makes it look easy, right? While it's dynamic, it's like, man, there's passing lanes all over the place. But then the contrast makes you realize it's not easy at all. He's just making it look that way.
Yeah, that accuracy that he showed and just, I mean, you could see it. You know, if guys were open, the ball was going to him. It was going to him on time. They were catching the ball. I mean, it really does. You know, we've said this over and over and over again. And people love to say, well, you got to build the lines. You got to do this. You got to do that. It's about the quarterback. Now, obviously, you got to have stuff around the quarterback. But ultimately, that quarterback, when he's accurate and that ball comes out and it's on time, it just makes everything else work. And it makes a guy like Jarvis Landry, who we know is already really, really good, it makes him really, really, really good. Like, it makes him that much better, just that little bit better.
If it makes you think, if you're watching the game with Baker Mayfield after watching Tyrod Taylor, and you think to yourself, why are the receivers more open now? They're not more open. He's just making throws that were there before. And you had a quarterback who just was a little reluctant to try it. And that's what Tyrod Taylor was. Nobody was surprised by that. Dan, everybody knew that when he got here.
Yeah.
He's not going to turn it over. Now, the one thing that I think you're going to have to live with, which I think is fine, Baker's going to get picked off a couple times. Baker is going to – I mean, that ball should have been picked. That one in the end zone, that should have been picked. And that's going to happen a little bit, but the trade-off is worth it. The trade-off is worth it, and he's going to make plays, and it's just going to – it's going to make – it just changes the whole offense, as you said. It's all about the quarterback.
Yeah, and there's going to be moments where he reverts to some bad habits that he showed in the spring, and they weren't bad habits at Oklahoma necessarily because he could get away with them and can't in the NFL where every now and again he'll turn his back to the line of scrimmage and when he's trying to scramble around and move and some things that aren't maybe going to work at the NFL level. But what really impressed me about him is the quarterback I saw in the spring versus the quarterback I saw at the end of July, completely different guy. Quarterback I saw in the preseason, even better. It's just been progress, big steps of progress every single time I've seen him. And today was another example of that.
And that is the interesting thing. And I think it's worth discussing a little bit, because I do think what Hugh Jackson does matters to this franchise. So I think it's okay to discuss Hugh Jackson's handling of Baker Mayfield. The bottom line is he's in, they're ready to roll, and they're going to go from here. But the idea that did sitting for 2.5 games do something to Baker Mayfield, he did get to sit and see it. He got to see it at game speed from the sideline for 2.5 games. When you were watching him on the sideline today, he was locked in. Mm-hmm. He had his helmet on. You could tell he was thinking the game along with everything that was happening. And I'm not so sure that didn't happen. Help him that he came in the middle of a game. He got to see the Jets defense, what they were doing. They were blitzing a lot early. They were getting pressure. He got to diagnose some of that from the sideline before having to deal with it. That won't be the case going forward when he starts. But, you know, I think if you want to be critical, oh, Baker should have started from the beginning, I think he can be that. But I also think there's probably some legitimacy to the idea of this guy got a little bit of a feel in the first two games, and then you saw he absolutely was ready when it was time.
Yeah, and look, I don't know that 2.5 games versus starting week one makes a huge difference, but you're right. I watched him on the sideline a lot tonight, and he had that helmet on. He was looking at the play card on his wristband between plays. He was on the bench after the first series, Tyrod Taylor on one side, him on the other, and Drew Stanton in the middle. And he was as engaged as Tyrod was on that Microsoft Surface that they used down there, while Drew Stanton was kind of coaching what he was seeing. And you could just see that he was really into it. He was pointing at it. He was just very engaged with whatever Drew Stanton was trying to show him and Taylor. So, I mean, that's the real difference that I've seen in Baker. You know, when he took this all in stride, there was never any public questioning of the plan or anything like that, and he embraced the mental aspect of it. Take those mental reps, do the work you need to do. Like every backup quarterback says, they prepare like they're the starter. Well, it seems like he actually did prepare like he was the starter, and he looked prepared when he went out there today.
And that's the funny thing. I mean, it's so early, and this is going to be – this is a very interesting time for young quarterbacks in the NFL. This is a very interesting rookie draft class that we're seeing. But I know there were national headlines after Sam Darnold looked good in week one that like, oh, the Browns are going to regret passing on Sam Darnold. It's like, who looked better tonight? They're going to be directly compared. I think they're both going to be good. But that's the thing that I just never thought it. And it's only one game. But that just doesn't look like a guy that's a miss. You know? Like, is he going to be Drew Brees? Is he going to be, like, the all-time passing leader in the NFL? No, he's not. But he's got something that I think a lot of previous quarterbacks here lacked. And it is that all that combination. And it's not... like, it's great that he runs around and pumps his fist.
Yeah.
If he couldn't throw, nobody would care. But he has – it's the arm strength and the pocket presence and the accuracy and the attitude and the leadership. And it's all that. And it was clearly on display tonight, I think, in a way that makes you believe it translates, right? The defenses and the teams are going to get better. But it feels like what he does absolutely translates.
We've seen it over and over again. The Browns pass on a quarterback – they play that quarterback, and that quarterback comes into their stadium, or they go to that guy's stadium, and he beats them, right? We've seen that before, and you're left questioning, oh, gosh, I can't believe they did that. Well, that didn't happen tonight. The quarterback that the Browns picked came in and led them to victory.
Yep.
And that's a very – who knows how this plays out long term? Like you said, I don't see a situation where Baker's a complete disaster at this point. I think his floor is high enough that you're going to be able to win a lot of games with him. His ceiling – you know, I hate to make the comparison because Drew Brees is a Hall of Famer, but that's the kind of ceiling you're looking at when you take a guy number one overall. Yeah. That's what you hope he turns into, but the floor seems incredibly high, and that's I think, what Browns fans can kind of cling to a little bit as well.
And the bonus is he pumps his fist and
yells.
The bonus is that everybody is going to love this guy in Cleveland.
Gosh.
Like that... he is going to be Cleveland's guy in a time when LeBron James just left. And for whatever reason, we know Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez are unbelievable players. And Corey Kluber and Carlos Carrasco and Trevor Bauer and that entire starting rotation. But yet there's still a little something and your guy is here. And you know what? Like it really should be 0% consideration. You've got to take the best quarterback.
I think Darnold would have been a fine pick. I thought they were going to take Sam Darnold, and I think that would have been great. I think Sam Darnold's going to be good. I didn't want Josh Allen. I think Sam Darnold's going to be good. That aspect of it, for a city, not even just a franchise, but a city who wants to rally around the guy, Baker Mayfield is quite a bit of a step above Sam Darnold in that. It's bonus, but now that you saw the play, that's a kind of nice bonus, because this is going to be a fun 10 days for Browns fans to get ready for the next game.
It didn't look like it after about 30 minutes. It looked like it was going to be a long 10 days, and we were going to talk about quarterback controversies and head coach controversies, and there's going to be plenty of time to talk about that head coach. We'll see what happens over the remainder of the season, but it appears, whether we hear it Friday on the conference call or Monday or Wednesday, whenever it happens, it appears that it's going to be Baker Mayfield from here on out, and starting in Oakland. And Browns fans should feel good about that. This team, a lot of people believe this team is going to win some games this year, and what we saw tonight looked like a team that's going to win some games, finally.
And now the one thing is like, just don't get out over your skis, you know, Browns fans. It's like, he's not going to be perfect. He's going to have some rough games. He's going to have a game where he gets picked off three times. He's going to make some mistakes, but that's okay. And it's this isn't a fluke, right? No. I mean, like, I think everybody in this building, everybody in this press box, everybody in this city would look at this and say, you know what? Like, if DeShone Kizer had a game where he just ripped it up, might have been like, okay, well, that was good. And it's like, but still, like, is he going to be accurate next week?
There was enough you could point at, game, throw to throw, and say, I just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't know with him.
But it doesn't, it feels 0% like that with Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
So
after a half.
and then combine it with two, and it's, you know, again, obviously, we're going to be talking and writing a lot about Baker Mayfield for the next 10 years. He's going to be the guy that's going to draw the attention. But when it is backed up by a defense, it is nice to see this defense get supported by the offense, because I'm sure they've been frustrated the first 3 weeks to create all these turnovers, and the offense can't do anything with it. They had some terror. Mm-hmm. They were getting field position. They were creating things. They punted them down to the one. Then the Browns got it back on the Jets' 39-yard line. The offense went backwards. Then the Browns end up back at their 6-yard line. It's like, what happened there? The defense is trying to create field position. It's not even turnovers. And the offense is going backwards. That combination, when you've got a young defense and a young quarterback, then it's not just about Baker Mayfield. You really see, and Larry Ogunjobi was talking about this afterwards. He said, we've had pieces, but you've got to connect them. And I feel like as much as Baker Mayfield obviously is the biggest piece, he's also the connector for all the other pieces. Because it's great for Myles Garrett to be good, and it's great for Antonio Callaway to have potential, but you've got to connect it. And now, if Baker Mayfield connects it, he's not alone out there. He's got some young guys with him that might be able to do something here.
Should be fun. Browns play again in Oakland in 10 days on Sunday. They head to the West Coast. It'll be great, and Browns fans get to enjoy an NFL Sunday having just watched their team win. That's exciting.
I don't know if you were – Baker Mayfield at the end of his news conference said, Todd Haley said – winning on Thursday night is like winning twice, because you get the win on Thursday and then you get to watch everybody else lose on Sunday. So they are going to be enjoying this quite a bit.
Yes. So the Browns get a little mini bye here. They get a little mini break. They'll be back to work on Monday. And of course, we will be there as well. Sibling Rivalry Brewing, our sponsor. Again, we appreciate them getting on board with the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. And I got to say one more time, Monday Night Football, before you go root against the Steelers when they play the Bucks, go do some boy band boogie and beer dance fitness class, 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Monday, September 24th. So get yourself in shape and then drink beer.
I'll see you there.
All right, for Doug Lay Maurice, Mary Kate Cabot, I am Dan Lobby. Thanks for listening, everybody.